Okay. I know that we stopped at in Philippians 2, where it says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. And then we ran into faith only. I thought we'd spend a couple of minutes here. I don't want to really get too involved in it, but it would be an excellent study at some time in the future. And we'll try to do that and spend a little bit more time and details then. But we can just kind of touch base today on this. Does anybody have any comments? I know Bob made a comment last Sunday. Does faith only save? Jane?
Well, your faith is kind of like a little part of it. You have to work at it. I think it takes effort, prayer, study, not just helping out people who need help. You've got to continually feed it and nurture it.
Yeah. Anybody else? Is it in Ephesians 2, verse 8 and 9? For by grace you've been saved through faith, and this, not of your own doing, it's God's gift, not because of works, lest any man should boast. Does this seem to be in conflict with what we're reading here in Philippians, work out your own salvation? Does that seem to conflict, these verses?
Kind of, but in faith, there's always works. You're always in works with faith.
What do you think that Paul is saying here when it says work out your own salvation?
Just pointing out the fact that it's a participatory thing, that it's an active thing, that if you're going to be open to be saved, you have to put in some input into it too.
Okay. Well, I think it all, yes, go ahead. Okay. Anybody else?
I didn't understand what was being
anybody
said.
Anybody on Zoom that has a comment?
Well, I didn't understand what was being said by the ladies back there, but I know
let's
that...
Let's go ahead. Let's turn over to James, the book of James, second chapter. And I think Paul will give us a good example here of James.
Ron?
He'll give us a good example here of just
Ron?
Exactly what it means to... work out your...
No, his hearing aids aren't working.
Huh? You say his hearing aid is causing problems?
I can find a book of James in here.
Okay.
Let's look at James 2, 14, and we'll go down. What does it profit, my brethren, if a man says he has faith, but has not works? Can his faith save him? If a brother or sister is ill clad and in lack of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things needed for the body, what does it profit? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. But some will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I by my works will show you my faith. You believe that God is one. You do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. Do you want to be shown, you shallow man, that faith apart from works is barren? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered his son upon the altar. You see that faith was active along with his works, and faith was completed by works. And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. You see that a man is justified by works and not by faith alone. And in the same way, was not also Rahab the harlot justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? For as the body apart from the spirit is dead, so faith apart from works is dead. So we need, basically what this says is that we have to have faith, of course. Yeah. We're saved by grace, aren't we? God's grace. We're never going to attain that perfect goal, even though that is part of what Paul is saying in Philippians 2. But so we know that we're saved by grace, but we have to have faith. That produces faith, doesn't it? But in order for faith to work, we have to have works as well. And I think it all depends on what the definition or how we define the word works. Okay, so how do we teach this? John.
So I think we might have slightly kind of got off track here with the whole workout and works here, because they are two different things here.
Yeah.
So in terms of, if you want to understand what workout means, I think we can just go back to the beginning of the verse. Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, so that word right there, obey, work. We can skip a little bit forward. Work out your own salvation. So we work out our own salvation through our obedience. And as far as our works, our deed, that's totally separate. That's our deeds. That's our putting, you know, helping out the poor, helping out, you know, brothers and sisters in need. Obviously, we need to do that to be good Christians, you know, and to show, you know, the blessings that we have received. But in terms of the whole workout thing, it's about our obedience.
That's right. That's right. Good point. Thank you, John. Appreciate that. Okay. So we know that salvation and faith is granted by to us by the gift of grace, and that's how they are acquired, but our faith is demonstrated by our works. And as John read that and pointed out to that, works is basically what we do for our obedience. We have to work for that, don't we? Okay. In John 15:8 says, by this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so prove by my disciples bearing fruit, doing good works that glorifies God, our proof of our salvation. So any declaration of faith that does not result in a changed life and good works is a dead faith, isn't it? True savings faith can never be by itself. It always brings life, and life produces good works. Okay, let's go ahead and we'll kind of shunt that to the side, and I think that would be a good study sometime in the future, but let's go ahead and continue our study of Philippians, the second chapter. Can I get somebody to read Philippians 2? 14-18.
Do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may have cause to glory, because I did not run in vain nor toil in vain. But even if I am being poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I rejoice and share my joy with you all. And you too, I urge you, rejoice in the same way and share your joy with me.
Okay. So here Paul continues his entreaty. Don't grumble amongst yourself or question, but stay firm in the faith without blemish. Now, when he says don't question, does this mean we shouldn't question what's being said? We're going to just accept that without any research? What is being said? Yeah.
Well, disputing has more of an anger kind of sense to it. So if you're grumbling, or if you're disputing through anger, it's something you should definitely avoid. That's not a Christ-like attitude.
Yeah.
But you can certainly discuss differences between one another and search out the way.
Okay. Good point. Anybody else?
It's the perfect timing for kind of what we had going on here. You know, we worked it out real nicely. You know, something like that can make people be angry or, you know.
Yeah. Just a good question, though, is should we just accept things as they are? Or should we question those things? You'll remember that, remember Paul and Silas were in Thessalonica, and Paul got run out of town. Basically, they were looking to get him, and so he left. I think they left Silas there, but he left, and he went down to Berea. And while he was in Berea, of course, the Thessalonians weren't very nice to him. Paul went to Berea, and there they were a little bit more noble Jews there, and it says that they didn't take Paul's word for anything, but they searched the scriptures daily to see that if Paul's work and words were true. We find this in relationship to Paul's second missionary journey in Acts 17 chapter. But I think too that John and what is your name? Robert. Thank you, Bob. But anyway, I think that that's exactly right. And I think that they were talking about grumbling and anger and that type of thing. So in verse 16, Paul also exhorts the Philippians, the Philippians, to hold fast in the word of life, so that I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor without reward. Even if I'm sacrificed for your faith, I will rejoice, and you should rejoice with me. Now here Paul is saying, look, even if I'm imprisoned, even if I am sacrificed, it's a gain for me and a gain for you as well. And you should rejoice with me. He says, I'm thrilled to death that I have not spent my time worthlessly. I have spent my time, and if you remember, the Philippians, all this time that Paul was in prison, even before he was in prison, when he was on the missionary journeys, the Philippians continued to support him, sending him funds to sending him gifts on a regular basis. And if I recall, I can't recall where it's at now, but Paul makes comment about the Philippians being the only ones that provided support for him for a long time. And so he is, here he is talking about being so happy that he didn't spend his time worthlessly.
Go to the dollar store and take the Bible.
There was a lot of fruit for his labor. And then Paul changes tack a little bit. He says, I hope to send Timothy, and I hope to see you personally. So he's not at that point where he realizes that that he's going to lose his life. I think when it comes down to the last part, in a short period of time, he realizes that, that he's not going to be released. But he is hoping at this point in time that he's going to be able to see them personally. And so this is where he... Yes?
It was this chapter.
I'm sorry?
This chapter, verse 4 and 15, you were referencing.
Yes.
This book, I
mean. Okay. I can't hear him
either. 4 and 15?
Yeah.
Oh, good. He did adjust his hearing aid then.
Oh, yes, that's right. Thank you. Yeah, that's where I knew, I was thinking it was in Acts, one of the missionary journeys, but it's chapter 4, verse 15, and it says, you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into the partnership with me in giving and receiving, except you only. For even in Thessalonica, you sent me help once and again. So, we know, therefore, sometime that Paul was supported solely by the Philippian church. Thank you. Appreciate that, Ted. Okay. So now he's talking about sending Timothy, and Timothy's there in Rome with Paul, but also a man named Epaphroditus, who was also there, and he was a member apparently of the Philippian congregation, and he had been sent to see Paul with gifts and Paul's support, and while he was in Rome, he got really sick and just about died. But then Paul is saying, I'm going to, with God's grace, because of God's grace, he regained his health, and I am going to send him back home to you. Because he is anxious to return home. So that gets us through, pretty much gets us through a brief study of chapter 2. And so we're going to try to get started into chapter 3, although I'm sure we've only got a few minutes, so we're not going to get too close, but we can at least get started. Anybody have any comments about chapter 2? Okay. It almost seems like there is a group of Jews that have just made their life, just to plan their life around harassing Paul and his associates. And it seems like they must have been supported by somebody, but they seem to just follow Paul and his group around from city to city, trying to make as much trouble as they possibly could. And so in chapter 3, Paul begins with a warning against the influence. Yes, John?
So I know we read to what, chapter 19 just now, or chapter 20, excuse me, verse 19, verse 20, where did we end up?
You mean on
chapter 2.
Chapter 2?
Yes. What was the last verse we read, 20?
19? Yeah, we were talking about a little bit about sending Timothy to.
Are we going to continue? Are we moving on to 3? Because I feel like there is some pretty good information 20 and on.
Well, we can go back to 19 if you want. We can study with that a little bit if you like.
Well, the first thing I read was in chapter 20, for I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state. That just popped in my head immediately because I don't know about you guys, but I find myself confiding, in, especially again, more recently, about the past 5 years, confiding in friends and old friendships and in people who aren't necessarily in the body, and they don't have the same mindset as me, whereas now I'm finding myself confiding more in the brotherhood, and because we are like-minded, we have the right, focus. There's a lot more here in chapter 2.
Yeah, there is a lot more here. Yeah, I agree. We could delve into it, and that may be something that we might want to do. Let's go ahead and read that. Somebody want to read? Don, you want to read?
Yeah, did you want me to just read all the way through?
Yeah, just go ahead and read right through.
So starting in 20, for I have no man like-minded who would naturally care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ. But ye know the proof of him, that as a son with the Father, he hath served with me in the gospel. Him therefore I hope to send presently, so soon as I shall see how it will go with me. But I trust in the Lord that I also myself shall come shortly. Yet I suppose it necessary to send you to Epaphroditus, my brother, and companion in labor, and fellow soldier, but your messenger, and he that ministered to my wants. For he longed after you all, and was full of heaviness, because that ye had heard that he had been sick. For indeed he was sick nigh unto death, but God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I sent him therefore the more carefully, that when ye see him again, ye may rejoice, and that I may be the less sorrowful. Receive him therefore in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such in reputation, because for the work of Christ he was nigh unto death, not regarding his life, to supply your lack of service toward me.
Okay. Anybody have any comments about that? Okay. Paul was anxious to get Epaphroditus back to his home. He was anxious about it. He didn't want to add sorrow on sorrow. And so he was anxious to get Epaphroditus back to Philippi as well as Timothy. Any comments, John?
Just in terms of holding the brotherhood at a high standard, rather than seeking the fellowship of people outside the body, have more love for the brotherhood and not respect, but how to hold each other at higher standard or higher reputation, as the Bible says here.
Okay. Ted.
I'd also say that what we see from these verses is God's providence. You know that Paul was told when he was converted that he was going to be shown just how much he would have to suffer. But you see that he was given here some joy, some relief, with aid from Epaphroditus and aid from Timothy. So we see that God was looking out for Paul as well. Even though Paul suffered a lot, he still had this aid from Epaphroditus and from the Philippians that helped him continue his work. So God was providentially looking out for Paul all the time.
Yeah, it's incredible how much trouble that Paul was involved in as far as getting beat up and thrown in prison and having shipwrecks and all sorts of things. I think tells us, I think it's 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter. Paul relates how many problems he had, and yet he counted it all for gain. Then he goes into, in chapter 3, he warns about these legalistic Jews that seem to be just following Paul around and distorting their teachings. Paul warns them. He says, just beware of dogs. And back in those days, packs of dogs roamed the streets, and they ate the garbage and so forth like that. They were basically wild dogs. They would attack them, tear you to pieces if they caught you by yourself, and this type of thing. And we have examples of that through, Jezebel got eaten by the dogs outside the city walls. He's talking about these people that are coming and wanting to tear them to pieces and tear their firm beliefs apart. Evil workers, he talks about those as well. Then he talks about beware of mutilation. We know from past studies that these are the Judaizing Jews that are insisting if you're going to be saved, you're going to have to become basically a Jew, you're going to have to be circumcised. So Paul is telling him that beware of these people. And then Paul explains, he says, well, you know, if anybody should be perfect, if anybody should, be like me, I was the perfect Jew. I was born into the tribe of Benjamin. He said, I had Jewish parents. On the eighth day, I was circumcised according to Jewish law. He was a Pharisee. He was educated at the feet of Gamaliel, who at one time was the high priest in Jerusalem. He was an avid persecutor of the church. We see that back in the first few chapters of Acts. He was jealous for the law. He was a perfect Jew. He was a Pharisee. And according to the law, he said, I was a perfect Jew. He said, I was blameless. But, he says, whatever gain I had, I count as loss for the sake of Christ. Up until he was converted, he killed people, killed Christians, threw them in jail, threw them in the prison, had them tortured. So he was the perfect, zealous Jew as far as the church was concerned. And we get somebody to read chapter 3, verse 7 through 11.
Have a comment, Ron?
Yes.
So how would we apply this that you just talked about to ourselves today in this day and time? We don't have packs of dogs running up and down our street, but we do have packs of dogs running through our society. And a real good example of that is if you're a Christian and you express some distaste against a sin, you're liable to have somebody jump down your throat and tell you you're just a hateful person.
And that's a common occurrence anymore.
Yeah, and you can actually be indicted for a hate crime and not have actually done anything. I'm sure that's possible. So Paul's saying that he's a zealot and he's suffered all these things. Would that be an example for us to be zealous in the same way and be on guard like he was on guard too?
I think so. Paul here is, And he's giving an example of himself as the perfect Jew. You know, I had all these pluses in my life. I did this, I did that, I was this, I was that. And so everything is perfect. But he did, he was zealous. And, but he had his, even though he was zealous, and then he says, I count it all for loss, but he is telling us, you know, as perfect as I was, I was doing this for the wrong thing. And now I count this as loss, but I count the gain in Christ Jesus. And this is where I should be zealous. You know, talking about packs of dogs and people that want to distort the word and extort their own personal belief. We have that in the church. And we have to guard ourselves against that all the time. You have members of the church that they seem to me to be detailed beyond belief, and they take something that might have influence and they're dogmatic about it. And it creates division in the church. There's a lot of things that are in a gray area as far as the church is concerned. And we all don't believe the same on every point. But we all have the group. Fortunately, as a group, you know, we can be together, even though we do differ on certain things. But anyway, thank you very much. We'll start again in chapter 3 next week.